You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, January 26th, 2010. This is episode 168, Sounds Abound. Welcome back to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is your host, Martin Spriggs, and this is a podcast about technology and ministry and where those two meet. And we're very happy that you've decided to tune in once again. This is our classroom technology show, and as usual, beside my virtual side, sidekick is Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
I'm envisioning riding along in the sidecar and some old motorcycle or whatever.
With goggles and a leather hat, yeah.
That's us.
But we need an additional sidecar because we have with us, again, Gail Potratz from New London, Wisconsin. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, and I will not be wearing a leather hat. I'll be wearing my cheese head.
That's right. Good, nice
Packer
segue.
Packer fan yes. there, huh?
Yes. So, yes, the for those of you that have been in a cave and perhaps don't live in Wisconsin, the Packers are back in the Super Bowl. I guess it was, what, back in 97, I want to say, that was the last time they were there. So,
well, that was the last time we were there. The last time we won was 96.
That's right. That's right. And I was not in Wisconsin at that. I was in Illinois at that point, so I didn't get to enjoy the festival that is Packers Super Bowl party. So it's going to be interesting.
It's ongoing. It's a lot of fun. Makes school a lot of fun too this week.
Mm-hmm. The roads will be real clear during the Super Bowl.
Here, so. For sure.
Anyway, let's talk about classroom technology. We might as well. We have two people that spend a lot of time in the classroom and have an eye toward technology. And the focus of our show today is kind of a mixed bag. We've got an interesting interview coming up. But we want to kind of focus on 21st century skills and audio, right?
Correct.
How do those two fit? How do we marry the fact that we've got all these cool audio tools and MP3s and the ability to play them and to create them and kids in the classroom?
Well, I think first we have to go back just a little bit and look at a little bit of review history as to what the 21st century skills are, and then we'll see how audio fits into that.
Sure.
Wisconsin was kind of a pioneer in jumping on board with the 21st Century Skills Initiative back in, I think it was 2006. Anyway, they were third behind North Carolina and West Virginia. This was a business-driven initiative. A lot of companies got together and sat down with the educational world and said, you know what, the skills kids are coming out of schools with these days are more fit to the old industrial days, mm-hmm. and we're not going to be there very long. We need to get together and figure out what skills kids need to learn to do a good job in the business world, and then, of course, that would have an impact on our global economy as well. And I think, to me, it's interesting the things they pointed out. They pointed out four areas that we were weak in as a nation of skills with our graduating seniors. Professionalism, which was the work ethic. Oral and written communication. That's where I live in the language arts department, I guess. Teamwork and collaboration. And critical thinking and problem-solving skills.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole thing came about as an effort to try to solve the weakness in those areas. And as it developed, the 21st century skill set covers all areas of the curriculum and then adds a few more that maybe we didn't think about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's those that we didn't think about, global awareness, a lot of economical things, a lot more economics. But just the ability to communicate and create products that can communicate information is huge now in industry. And so therefore, we back it up to teaching kids how to do those things through our educational system as well.
Mm-hmm.
I can see where all four of those skills are important, specifically the problem-solving skills. And problem-solving really requires kids to think outside the box a little bit. And I think one of the things that having audio skills or, you know, any kind of Web 2.0 tool set at your disposal is that if you know about those kind of things, then you can work them in when you have a problem. You can call on those tools. So audio probably falls more than anything under problem solving, so that you can incorporate audio to enhance a presentation or communicate via a podcast or whatever it may be, and solve whatever problem you're facing. So I could definitely see how it could fit into that area.
Part of
Go ahead, Gail.
The oral and written communication there too, obviously, you know, with like you mentioned, the podcasting and digital stories. I know that just for in my experience, when we've done digital stories or any kind of multimedia presentation, for a long time, the hardest thing to get was the audio component. If you wanted a background, you know, just a musical instrumental background type piece, and then the whole idea of kids would bring in their CDs from home, and well, here we go, I got it. When you're adding audio multimedia projects and doing the creative work that 21st century skills all point to, creativity and creating something, then you've got a problem if you don't have a good source of legal music and audio.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we wanted to talk with Barry Britt today, because he does have that, and that's where he lives in that area. So a good source for us to listen to on that.
Yeah, explain a little bit about how this all came about and how you got connected with Barry in the interview that we're going to play here in a minute, Gail.
Okay, well, Barry's background is in the musical industry itself, and he talks briefly about that. I met him through my work with the Stevens Group, and in the Milwaukee Digital Media Conference last summer, I interviewed him for that conference. So that's where I connected with him on a one-to-one level. But I've known about him because I've used his website, before Wisconsin came involved in it, as we'll listen to in the tape, in the interview, rather. But I just got to know him personally. He's a very dynamic person who's very passionate about what he does and has a clear vision of how education and the whole audio component need to fit together.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So without further ado, why don't we play the interview with Barry Britt from Sounds Abound.
Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Gail.
How nice to talk to you this Monday morning. That is more snowy in Atlanta than it is in Wisconsin.
That is correct. So I don't have to worry about flying out today. Yeah, we've got a nice mixture of snow and ice that easily grounds the aircraft. And trust me, Atlanta drivers are not good in this stuff. So everybody needs to stay home.
Home is a good place to be today.
That's right.
All right. Well,
thank goodness for Skype.
Well, today on the Wells Tech Podcast, we've been talking about the 21st century skills and how they apply especially to audio. And we know that you have a great connection to that particular piece. So I'd like you, if you wouldn't mind, to begin the interview today by telling us a little bit about your background and how that connection came about.
Oh, sure. And it's quite an interesting story. And I promise to make it a short one. But I'm actually the last of five kids, Gail, and I grew up in a musical family and grew up as a musician. And to keep the long story short, I was attending Berklee College of Music and had been writing and producing and recording with various artists, many artists that our students and teachers would recognize. And I was also extremely well-versed in copywriting and licensing music. And during my time there, I also was the independent record, we were starting record labels and launching independent artists, all by way of early social networking and via the web. One thing that was really, really interesting about what we were doing is it was all perfectly legal. Even though we were being sued by the record labels because they were losing money, the truth is there was nothing illegal that we were doing. And this caught the attention of a group in Atlanta, and that group was a group of educators. And this would have been in 1996, and the group of educators were starting a royalty-free music library company in order to provide copyright-safe music for what would come to be known as 21st century skills and technology. And obviously, the educators in Atlanta were extreme visionaries. And so they seeked me out via the web and via some other contacts. And they were really interested not just in the fact that we were musicians and that me and my network had been working and producing and recording, but they were also interested in the fact that we were licensing music. But what really caught their attention is the fact that we knew how to do things in a creative way and advance them legally. And what we were doing to upset the major record labels, they really, you know, thought that was... we must be the people that they were looking for. So in 1996, we came on board and started doing some demos for the educators. And then, interestingly enough, in 1997, we worked as a group to endorse the Fair Use Guidelines. The Fair Use Guidelines for Multimedia and Education were endorsed by well over 100 groups and organizations, of which our group was one of them, and that would be ASCAP, which is the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. And that was in 1997. So in 1998, the union between the educators and what we refer to as the industry specialists, with the group that I head up, which would be comprised of musicians, filmmakers, technology, and also internet people, we decided to incorporate in 1998, and we became Sounds About Music. So it's really interesting because all the rebellious acts of my past put me in a position to actually teach this method to educators and to students. And currently, my role at Sounds About is to procure new content that is licensed safe for students and teachers to use in their podcast, in their video productions. That's job number one at Sounds Abound. Job number two at Sounds Abound these days is for me to educate educators and students on some of the nuances of these principles. And then job number three is for me to continue what I do in a commercial atmosphere so that we can continue to bring the very best for education.
Well, thank you, Barry, and that is truly appreciated because I know from my own experience, and I think I speak for others listening to the podcast today, that when we're working with the 21st century skills and trying to encourage students to communicate and collaborate and then produce this creative product to share with others, the audio, the music is has always been one of the hardest things to pin down. Find sources, find resources to use. So I want to make sure that people are aware of your website, Sounds Abound, and what it does offer to people. Now, oftentimes when teachers are searching out on the web for music, you will run into a lot of websites and a lot of searches you do that say free music.
Right.
Now, give us your take on that idea. Okay, what is free music?
Yeah, Gail, that's an interesting question because it's one that we field on a daily basis. Because almost every day we'll get an email from one of the salespeople that, you know, work directly with district coordinators or regional coordinators, and someone will say, "Oh, well, we just found this free music site," or "Here's some free music." There's two things to define, first of all, and that is when someone is, I should actually say, three free resources, and let's kind of break that down a little bit. Because the first thing that you want to ask yourself whenever someone says, "Hey, here's some free music that you can use," look to the source or the organization. Who is it that's saying there is free music available? Is it Rhapsody? Is it, you know, some other music distributor? You have to look toward a credible source to do that, because there's new illegal sites popping up every day, especially since LimeWire was shut down. And you don't want to get involved in something that's going to get you in trouble. And I'm not going to name any further names at this point of any of those particular organizations. But if someone comes along offering free music files, you really need to look at the credibility of that organization, especially before you start downloading, because the RIAA, the Recording Industry Association of America, has ways of tracking those downloads based on your IP address. So you don't want to become actively involved in some uncredible resource. Credible resources for music would be iTunes, would be Rhapsody, Amazon.com, Walmart.com is actually one of the largest legal distributors of music. So first of all, look to the organization. And then second of all, you have to look toward the purpose of the music. All right, whenever a lot of these people say free music is now available, they're offering some free or discounted music based on listening purposes for personal and home use. That doesn't mean you're getting a synchronization license, just like when you purchase music. When you purchase music legally for 99 cents, whether it's free or whether you're getting a bargain off of the 99 cents, really what they're doing is they're licensing music for you to listen to on your computer, burn a CD, place it on your iPod, and to some limited, you know, degree, possibly even share that with friends. But what's not included is a synchronization license. So that's item number two. And then item number three is look at the license, because we know that there are, let's say you get past the first two steps, you know, past the organizations, and then you look to the purpose of the music. What are they offering this music for? If you make it to point number three, are they offering a synchronization license for that music? You need to read the license, because sometimes they'll say, yes, it's free music that can be synchronized with videos, with podcasts, and it can even be used for education. And so long as you do it in these terms, it's free. But always go and look at the license, because there's been many school organizations, especially at the district level, that thought they were using free music. But because they didn't read the license, the music companies came back to them and said, not with a lawsuit, but came back to them and said, okay, our license states that you can use this music for free so long as you don't put it on a public network. So long as, and that statement right there in and of itself says a lot, because what if you decide to podcast it? What if you decide to put it on your website? What, and most everything we're wanting to publish these days, and I would say more than 9 times out of 10, that's what students and teachers are wanting to do, is publish. Well, these particular schools and organizations had published music in a public environment, and then these companies came back and said, okay, you now owe us $50. Because that's the rate for use outside of the classroom, and it's $50 times your 500 uses. So what appeared to be free was no longer free. And we're huge advocates of free. We even have a free music resource on our site. And even back in the days before I came to Sounds Abound, we actually made free music available in order to promote artists and even other small independent record labels. But it was done with an understanding. It was done through a permissions process, and it was done tick for tack. And so, you know, even if something is as simple as an email, hey, can we do this? And someone says, yes, you can. That's a license. And so what we find is that a lot of teachers in particular, since we don't, you know, we should not put it on students to go and read a software license or a free music license. What we're finding is that teachers, just like with fair use, they're kind of taking a general perspective of it, but they're not looking at the nuances of what fair use offers and the conditions of what becomes fair use. Here again, when you see a free music site and they're offering synchronization rights to free music, be sure not to supersede or violate their license, because they will come back and ask for money. And what appeared to be free in the beginning was not free. And one district I'll name in particular, I won't give you the name of the district, but we've seen this with three large county offices across the United States. And I will give the geography. One was in Southern California, one was in the Midwest, and one was in the Northeast. And this is just the accounts that we know of. But what they thought was free music, they wound up having to pay, in these three cases, right in between $10,000 and $50,000 each to the company whose license that they, quote, violated.
Right. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you talk about number three, the synchronization, because that is what people are looking to be able to do, because everything we do involves publishing out on the web and taking a podcast or a digital story or whatever it is and getting it in the format where music can add to the mood and the message of the content. So I think it is up to teachers to understand this as best as we can, and that's why it's good to have you on the show with us today to help foster a better understanding of that. I think the most common thing that happens is a project is created and we need to teach kids that it is not okay if you, many of them own even a hard copy, a CD itself, not just an iTunes on their, you know, from iTunes on their iPod, but own a CD. Well, if they own the CD, then can they use the song with their project? No, you can't. And that's hard for them to understand. So explain what you've done with Sounds Abound, your site, and especially with your licensing now in the state of Wisconsin and with the education department and how that works.
Well, certainly. Since we're founded by educators, it's a very friendly environment. Or as I say, the license is very, Sounds Abound license is very friendly for teachers and students. And our founding educators have always been those that, for lack of a better word, dictate the policies by which we operate at Sounds Abound. So whenever you go to soundsabound.com, and you click on the licensing tab, you first of all find something very interesting and comforting. No legalese. It's just a very straightforward, you know, here's what this music is. Here's what you can do with it. Here's the types of technologies that teachers and students can use this in. And best of all, the Sounds Abound license even goes on to say that if you want to produce and license a video yearbook, or I should say produce a video yearbook and distribute that and then turn around and sell it to parents for a profit, you can do that. We are the only music organization in the world that offers that kind of licensing for education, primarily for teachers and students in a synchronization atmosphere. So what we've done is we've worked to first of all, take out all the worries that we might talk about whenever something exceeds fair use, first of all. And then secondly, we've worked to work, you know, get them also past any worries that they would have if they saw, you know, a free music site, let's say, for example. Those conditions and fine terms that exist in there where if you do put it in your podcast, you're going to get in trouble. In other words, we've tried to be the catch-all for all these worries that might come up. There's even a resource out there, which I think most people are familiar with, called Creative Commons. And in Creative Commons, you know, it, there again, we have artists who license music on Creative Commons, but they still license music through Sounds Abound on our license for education because they have limitations. And Creative Commons, just like fair use and just like free music, has limitations. And so what we've done is we've worked to get past all the limitations that might exist so that when using the Sounds Abound music at soundsabound.com, they don't have to worry. And before I give a little bit more information about Creative Commons and some other resources out there, what we did, in addition to the licensing and the content that exists itself, but what we did in the state of Wisconsin is the ECB, which is the Education Communications Board for the state of Wisconsin, who provide digital materials and resources, purchased Sounds Abound statewide. And they've got six volumes plus one volume of sound effects that they've made available through badgerlink.net. And this gives the entire state of Wisconsin this type of access to our audio so that they don't have to worry about any of the fine print and nuances that exist when using Creative Commons, when using fair use or free music, but also we provide a lot of instructional information so that they can kind of understand more about why it's not okay to just bring your CD from home and pop it into your right. PowerPoint presentation.
Right. And from a teacher's aspect, I think the worry-free aspect of that site, of using music from SoundSavant, is very nice because all that legalese or mumbo-jumbo or whatever you want to call it has been kind of removed. And so you're using a trusted site, and you can just be free to create and not to worry so much about all of that stuff, plus getting kids to be creative and using it, using the music beneficially in their products and such. So to me, I think it is a very wonderful resource, and to have the state of Wisconsin provide that for us is certainly a great bonus. I just have one more question for you, Barry, about about SoundsBound. The music that you have on your site, what is the source for your indexed music? Where do you get it?
In the early days, it was produced by some of the top producers in the United States who were producing for other artists. And then as we started to to get further into our productions, especially into the early 2000s, we started to bring on even more noteworthy producers. And then we started to get involved in the licensing of global bands and artists and even independent record labels who were licensing the music. And this is where this was a big turning point, because SoundsAbound had always prided itself or ourselves on providing very, very cutting edge music. So whenever we started to reach out to other artists and to other record labels to provide their music, the cutting edge aspect of the music in terms of the best hip hop, the best rock, and the best of the various styles that exist out there were available. And we continued to take licensing to new heights, even with artist-submitted content. There's nothing stopping a teacher or student from coming to our website and submitting their own content. If you go to our homepage at soundsabound.com, you'll see an artist submission button. And, aspiring artists out there, whether they be students, whether they be teachers, can submit their musical content to SoundsAbound for future use. And, Gail, we probably during the first quarter of this year, I think we're going to be putting together a student and educator volume whereby they will be providing their music through SoundsAbound. We will not sell that volume, but we'll make it available for free, and that'll give them an even broader community by which to share their own creations.
Nice.
And since it's on a SoundsAbound license, nobody has to worry about somebody coming out of the shadows and saying, hey, you can't sell that video yearbook or whatever. It'll have all the nice licensing aspects.
The other thing I wondered was, we have this contract now with the state of Wisconsin. Are there any other states that are pursuing this, or are you promoting that to try to get other states on board? I can't imagine that there wouldn't be states that would follow up with this after this contract.
We currently have, about five of the regions in Iowa. And they're currently considering a statewide license. And then we have about three or four other states that are currently in a bid process, or I should say a proposal process with SoundsAbound, where they too are looking at statewide services.
Great. I asked that question because although we're kind of centered in Wisconsin and we have probably the bulk of our listeners and our teachers are residing in Wisconsin, we have listeners from all over the country. And a couple of the states you mentioned, I know we have avid listeners in those states, so they would be interested to know those things as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank you, Barry, for taking your time this morning to share your knowledge with us. It's been very enlightening, and we do appreciate everything you do for us in education. Thankful that there are people like you out there helping us in that part of our job. So thank you again, and thank you for being with the Wells Tech podcast this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Gail. Thank you for hosting me. Appreciate it.
Okay. Okay. Enjoy your snow day in Atlanta.
We will. Time to play.
Bye now.
Bye.
Nice job, Gail. Thank you for doing that. And, of course, thanks to Barry. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, I enjoyed listening to Barry, and definitely his passion for this space comes through. It was really interesting as he compared their service to other sound services that you might find out on the internet. One that I've used in the past is freesound.org, and they have the Creative Commons license that Barry talked about associated with the audio clips that are available there. And so if you aren't in Wisconsin, maybe you want to read those legal terms carefully, but I believe you can use the sound files from Freesound by giving attribution to the source of your files.
And we will probably need to have people contact us for password info. Is that right?
Sure. Yes. If they are in Wisconsin and they want to contact us via any of our communication channels, particularly they could send an email to wellstech@wells.net. We would be able to provide the password information so they could link and log into Sounds Abound's website and make use of the audio there.
Sounds good. Gail, thanks again for doing that. That's it's always great to hear from somebody that embedded in the industry and very knowledgeable, obviously, about that particular technology and how it fits specifically in the classroom. So good stuff.
Yeah. Very good. I'm just very glad that there are people out there that can do that for us, mm-hmm. because sitting in the teacher's desk here, you know, you're surrounded, you're involved in doing this all the time, and mm-hmm. you don't really have the time to go out and do the things he's doing and make sure things are legit. So I'm glad there are people doing that for us.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to ministry resources. Sally, you came up with something good here.
Yeah, I'm going to point people to my.brainshark.com, a new website that I found that allows you to upload all different flavors of content, add your own narration, and then easily share that content. So perhaps you have a PowerPoint or a document of some format, maybe a Word document that you've written a paper or something. Maybe you have a set of photos, or you'd just like to make an audio recording for a podcast or something of that nature. MyBrainShark.com, that's a strange name, can actually handle all of that, those different flavors for you. And I tested it out with a PowerPoint. I created a quick overview of the Wells Tech podcast. I'll throw that link out in the show notes so you can see an example. And once I uploaded my PowerPoint, then it allowed me to record audio slide by slide to go along with the different PowerPoint slides. It was nice because I could redo my audio if I didn't like the way it went, and I was only invested in the one slide. It wasn't like I had to record the whole entire PowerPoint in one recording session. I could do it slide by slide, and then it put it together for me in a nice format. And what's extra nice about it for all you webmasters out there is that if you have a My Brain Shark account and you do this, you get embed code. So if you're looking for a way to embed content on your own website that you've created, this is a great website to do that. Oftentimes we have the ability to use embed code, and we do it to add things like maybe a YouTube video or a Google Map or something of that effect. But now you can create your own content really easily with this My Brain Shark website. So that's why we wanted to list it as a ministry resource. Pastors out there that are producing Bible class material, this is a way for you to share it online and narrate your presentations or whatever. Our classrooms certainly could put together different presentations or documents and upload them here and add narration and be able to embed them on their website. So I think there's lots of potential here, and the reason I like it is because it's pretty easy to use. I set up an account and did it myself in less than 20 minutes, and I had something that I can embed on a website very easily. So I'm quite impressed with the services they're offering there. We'll have to watch it and see how it develops.
And it's free, correct?
Right. The price tag is great. It is free. They do have a pro level where you can pay $10 a month. And with that, you can get more private areas and no advertising and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So if you were looking to do private stuff that wasn't readily available via the internet to anyone who found it, then you might want to pay for a pro account with them.
Mm-hmm. So, Sally, does the advertising come along when you get the embed code? Do you, if you put it on your website, do you get advertising?
Yeah, and the advertising seems real minimal as the utility loaded when you click to play. It said, you know, this came from My Brain Shark. And then at the very end, it said, you know, create your own content on My Brain Shark at the very end. But it wasn't like there was an ad sitting there in the screen display or anything like that.
Like you'd see on YouTube or something.
Yeah, not real invasive.
Because that does sound great. I'm in the middle of some online Bible classes right now, and I think that sounds like it would fit a niche that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. I just like the simplicity. I think you don't have to be real intimidated by this. You could get some of your content out on the web pretty easily with this kind of tool.
I would think if you're doing any kind of synchronous or asynchronous teaching, this would be a great teaching tool. So if you're doing distance catechism class or something and want to present some material, this would be at least a more dynamic way to present the material where you could go through your slides, but then add the audio and annotate them that way. So good. Very good. Speaking of things that are free, or in this case no longer free, we've got a little item that came across the wires in our news and tech section, Sally.
Yeah, actually I think Gail pointed us to the fact that DimDim.com, which is an online web conferencing tool, is going to turn off their free services. I believe it's on March 15th. And I know many in the education spectrum have used DimDim for distance learning type connections. But there are many free resources that are out there. Last week we talked about one.
Big Marker.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about Join.me and others where you can actually share desktops and have whiteboards and those kind of things available to you. DimDim is just one that was available early on. It's been adopted by many people, so now they're looking for other alternatives. And I guess it was purchased last summer by Salesforce.com, but they're just now weaning people off the fact that they're not going to have their free service anymore.
Mm-hmm. Salesforce.com is typically not in the free business, so that kind of was expected. Mm-hmm. All righty. Shall we move on to our picks of the week? And, of course, we have three of them. And, Gail, would you mind starting us off?
Sure. My pick of the week this week is something that goes along with Dropbox. So if you, in order to use this pick of the week, which is called Drop It To Me, you need to have Dropbox installed on your computer. And what it is a protected portal for public uploads. So it actually creates a Drop It To Me folder in your Dropbox folder. And you just put a link on, like I have it on my blog, and then it just shows up in my links on my blog as a line that says upload here or file upload or something to that effect. And let's see, what does it say? It says upload file. Mm-hmm. And it's very minimal on the page. It's just a link, but then people can upload files to you, and it'll show up in your Dropbox. And it's free. Mm-hmm. And if you don't use a file server or another system of any kind, and you want kids to be able to hand in things to you, students to be able to hand in files, not only text but other types of files as well, this is a good way to do it.
Yeah, especially if they're larger than, you know, an attachment, an email attachment handle.
Right.
And this is a little bit more, not secure, but it's certainly more, it's going to make sure that the file gets from one place to another. So it's, email, you're never always sure. Yeah, you're never always sure whether it's reached its intended source. But here you are, because you get confirmation, and then you, and I use, the reason that I'm sharing this because I've used this too, Gail, is that you also get an email that says, hey, something's in your Dropbox, so you know what somebody's put there. There is one cat. First of all, it is free, and you get kind of you can craft your own URL. So I have one called dropittome.me/mspriggs, for instance. But you've got a 75 megabyte upload file size limit. So if you've got something bigger than that, and most files are not, so that's not going to be a problem. But you can also password protect it, too, if you want. So you're not just getting random files. So as long as the
person
knows
the password. It's just handier, too. Like, yeah, it is. You know, like I use the iDesk with Apple and a couple other things that do larger files. But you just have this link right on somebody's page, you know, right on your blog, right on your site. It just makes it easy for everyone. You don't have to go find a place or send them a link. It's right there.
Yep. And it works with a free tool like Dropbox. Of course, you have to mind your limits. So if you've got the 2 gig limit, you can't fill it up or it won't work. But there's all kinds of ingenious things being put out there that float on top of Dropbox. This Dropbox is really, really popular at this point. So that's a great pick.
I love the education twist to it, too, that the students can upload their files for you. So more and more of those mashup kind of solutions are really breaking down barriers that used to exist for being able to do that kind of thing. So it's a great pick.
Yep. There's usually a tool for almost anything you want to do, and you can usually find one for free. So, and I'm sure that's why some people listen to this show, and we're glad to provide it. So good pick, Gail. Thanks.
Thanks.
Sally?
I'm up next, and I'm going to stick with teaching people something. I'm going to point them to learn.wordpress.com. I would say if I were going to talk to someone about creating their own website, I'd probably point them to WordPress as my first choice these days. It's just become a favorite platform for me. It's really easy and intuitive to use, and it's very, very versatile. So maybe you think of WordPress as a blog site, and blogs being chronological and your own diary of things or whatever. But you can use a WordPress site for any kind of website and craft it in many different ways. There's a ton of amazing templates for design and things out there, and just lots and lots of widgets and plugins that you can add to your site and turn a WordPress site into whatever kind of site you want to put out there. So maybe you're looking to do a classroom site or something, you know, specific for your youth group or something like that. I think WordPress is a good solution. And WordPress actually has two flavors. There's WordPress.com, which allows you to create a site on their servers for free. You get a web address, something like sallyswebsite.wordpress.com, you know, whatever you name it. Or you can actually, if you're a little more techie, you can download the WordPress software. It's free open source software from WordPress.org, and you can install it on your own web server and have your own domain associated with your WordPress site. Either flavor works basically the same way. Mm-hmm. And this new site, learnwordpress.com, I'm sorry, it's learn.wordpress.com, allows you to get the nuances of WordPress in a really fun and easy way. The tutorials are really straightforward. There's tons of screenshots and little short video snippets embedded as well. And so you get a good feel of the technical side of how to do a WordPress site, but they also sprinkle in a lot of ideas and brainstorming around content for your website as well. So they give you a good spark to how to organize your site and how what kind of direction and theme you're going to have with your site and that kind of thing. So I think it's a good way to get started if you're interested in setting up a WordPress site.
Very good. And we use WordPress here in the Senate office for some of the sites that we roll out, and we're a big fan as well.
And our Wells Tech site, for instance.
And our Wells Tech site is a WordPress site, for sure. Mm-hmm. The there is a kind of a variation of one of those flavors, too, that you were talking about, and I think we've mentioned this in the past. Churches or nonprofits, I think, can still get a free DreamHost account, and DreamHost makes it real easy to just do a quick wizard kind of tool where it'll set up that WordPress site for you. You still get the benefit of a domain name, but then you can, you know, kind of get under the covers and play with all those back-end things that are available within WordPress that this site talks about. So
Very good way to get started. Thanks for reminding me of that.
Yep, Martin. It's a good option. Mm-hmm. All right, my pick, and this is a first, I think, for me in 168 episodes, is I'm recommending a book, a real paper book, although it is in Kindle format, so I guess there's the tech angle. And it's not a tech book. It's a book that is actually one of my favorites, and it's called 200 Pomegranates and an Audience of One. Funny name, but and real short. It's a quick read. You could read it in an afternoon. It's only got 125 pages, something like that. But it's a story of a very obscure character in the Bible from 1 Kings 7 called Hiram, who was an artisan metal worker who was working on Solomon's temple. And the whole point of the book is it provides just some great lessons about who we're trying to please in whatever we do. And the reason I bring it up here on the podcast, because it's real short, it's powerful, it's not techy, but it kind of does reinforce the fact that whether you're stringing Cat 5 cable, building a web page, or even preaching a sermon or changing a diaper, you have an audience of one. And of course, that audience of one is God. So it really emphasizes the fact that you have some skills, you have some gifts, and in the prayer that we always pray before our podcast, we ask that God would use our conversation and our speech, and in some small way that we would do it to His glory, and that the people listening would take it and also use those things to His glory. That's really what it's about, is trying to spread the gospel through whatever means we have, but do it to the best of our ability. And we all have different abilities, and none are better than others. They're all important, and they all are seen by God. And that's what this book is about. So short, sweet. It's written by Sean Woods, who's a pastor. This is not a Wells pastor, not even a Lutheran pastor. He's a pastor of, I think it's a community church, or maybe it's a Baptist church down in South Carolina. But I heard him speak, and then I bought the book, and it did not disappoint. It's a good read, and I think worthwhile for everybody to do a quick read through it. So that's 200 Pomegranates and an Audience of One. If for nothing else, read the book because of the title. It'll explain exactly what it's talking about. Mm-hmm. So,
and I can actually personally rate this one for you.
Oh, really?
Because, yes, I read this book as a recommendation of yours on Goodreads.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's been years ago. I mean, it's a long time ago.
Yeah, 3 years ago,
years.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since that time, we have a little Bible class that's grown up around that book.
Is that right?
So,
no kidding.
Very cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, and a little plug for Goodreads, if you're interested. And kind of, I know, Gail, you're on it. Sally, you're on it. There are a number of Wells Tech listeners that are on it. If you just plug into goodreads.com, you can share your thoughts. And it's kind of a little book club, and we can rate it. And I've got some good reading suggestions from there as well.
Very good.
Let's move on. Speaking of Wells Tech listeners, to our community feedback section.
Yeah, we have quite a bit to share this week. First off, we had some comments on our last episode from Mike Polinsky, and he actually addressed several things that we talked about on the episode. He said he loves Pogo Plug, Martin.
Yeah.
That was your pick last week. And he said they have apps for Android and iOS,
yep.
So you can access your files anywhere, mm-hmm. mobily and anytime. So
yep.
That's great.
And I've got all those apps on my Android phone and on my iPad, and it works, like Mike says, very, very well. And
seamless.
Yeah, I just followed Mike on Twitter, so I'm enjoying his tweets as well.
Very good. He mentioned also that he uses a website called PaperQuote to change out his Windows 7 desktop background images. I talked about a pick last week in that regard. He found one that I'll actually change out images, and it has NIV Bible passages on the images. So we'll include a link for that from PaperQuote in the show notes if you're looking for some Bible passages for your Windows desktop.
Very good.
And then he followed up again with the fact that we talked about VNC last week. Mac and Windows computers come native with remote desktop connection, which allows you to log in to a remote PC and see the desktop. He says the computer you want to connect to has to be on the network, and then you can log in from a remote computer. And he uses that to access his work computer when he's at home.
Mm-hmm.
you also mentioned a paid for product called GoToMyPC. I think we maybe have talked about that before in the past on the podcast as well. But not all network administrators allow that kind of thing on their network.
A little nervous about that. Yep.
Yeah.
And one I think we mentioned in the past that we've just implemented here in the Senate office is TeamViewer does essentially the same thing. And that's a free product for non-commercial use.
So thanks, Mike, for all the great links and things that you shared.
Absolutely.
We appreciate that.
Glad to hear from. I don't know if we've heard from Mike before, so that's great.
Yeah. Next up, we heard from Jimmy Holub, who follows us on Facebook, and he pointed out something that many of our listeners may not be aware of, and that is we have a split personality on Facebook, Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Back before there were such things as Facebook pages, we started a Wells Tech group on Facebook.
Yep.
And we have a good number of people in our Wells Tech group. I know it's over 100. And then Facebook pages came out, and so we started a Facebook page. And that's where we usually point people. That's what our web address, facebook.com/WellsTech, points people to as our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
But we still maintain the group because we don't want to, you know, lose those people that are part of our group as well. So perhaps you're in both. I don't know. And I don't know if you think it's a little bit redundant to have two, but as of now, that's kind of our policy, is that we do have a page and a group for Wells Tech.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for, asking us about that, Jiminy. And hopefully you'll be happy to be part of our Facebook page.
Very good.
A quick website that I wanted to plug is something called Internet Buttons. And I just came across this one, and it allows you to organize a homepage for your browser with really simple, big, easy-to-use buttons. They suggest that you might even want to do it for your grandma because it makes such a simple starting place. And it's out in the cloud. You can log into your start page from any internet connection. And you can customize the buttons that show up on the page. And so if you're looking, I thought of maybe school computers might want just a standard start page with some big, huge buttons that make it super easy for the kids to get to the basic functions you want them to use on the school computers or whatever.
I agree. Boy, this looks kind of slick.
Yeah, I'll have to try it out. I haven't tried it. I just read about it, and it got good reviews, so I thought it was worth a mention.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up, we heard from Pastor Steve Daly, Martin, and he was asking you about your favorite Web 2.0 application. He's heard you in the past on the podcast mention two, Remember the Milk and Toodledoo. And he was wondering, which was your current favorite pick?
Yeah, because I had picked one, and then in not too short order, kind of switched in my approach. And Toodledoo was the one that I had used for actually over a year or so, and was working pretty well because it syncs with Outlook, and it has a web component, and I can get it on my phone, and so on and so forth. I ran into some syncing issues because it's kind of a workaround you have to do to get it to sync with Outlook. In fact, most things work that way. And then I ran across Remember the Milk, which I've used in the past but never had a good syncing app. And they came out with a good app that does sync with Outlook in a little bit better and more reliable fashion. So I switched to Remember the Milk, and there's a little bit more of an elegant app that's available on the Android phone and also on iOS. So that was why I switched to Remember the Milk. I think both are very serviceable. They both allow you to view your lists or your tasks by context, as you know, at computer, at email, at errands, whatever it is. We've talked about this approach in the past. So I'm sticking with Remember the Milk at this point, mostly because of its seamless kind of integration with Outlook at this point.
So I guess if our listeners are longtime listeners, you might remember that we interviewed Pastor Daly way back, probably in our first year of the podcast. And you may also remember that he's a serious Linux guy. I'm thinking he's not trying to sync with Outlook in any way, shape, or form. So Pastor Daly, you know, whatever your tool set is that you're trying to use this with, I think that's the determining factor. That's kind of the moral of the story or whatever. But for Martin and the Outlook sync, it must be Remember the Milk.
And I'm going to look it up here now, but I think there is a Linux component for Remember the Milk. I could be wrong. offline access. Not sure.
Okay.
I'll get back to you. But they sync with all kinds of stuff. So chances are that there's some good connection with the product set on Linux.
Okay.
But I'm sure Steve will figure that out. So please share.
Because
I think there are other people that we've talked to in the past that are on that Linux bandwagon as well.
Very good. All right. We had a couple of tweets from our tweeting teacher, Jason Schmidt, out at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska. First up, he shared a link to the 20th anniversary Space Educators Handbook. And looks like an excellent page. He gave it some rave reviews. So if you are teaching space education, then you can actually get a free handbook online. And you might want to check that out. He also shared a link to random.org. Martin, we've used random.org before when we needed a true random number.
Yep.
And this website is very versatile. It can generate random numbers for all kinds of different flavors of needs. And he apparently just discovered random.org and thought it was worth a tweet. So if you have a need for random numbers in your classroom or ministry, then this is the site for you.
And we've only just used kind of the random number generator tool or widget at the top. But as you go down that page, there's all kinds of calculators and generators based on all kinds of logarithms that would probably meet the needs of anybody looking to generate anything that's random. So worth a look. Probably a good study for a math class.
There you go. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a fun math class.
Yep.
Last up, we heard from somebody named Martin Spriggs.
Yep.
Share a video
and
least. With us.
I came across a YouTube video called Changing Educational Paradigms, and really well done, I thought. What they've done is they've taken a lecture about a 12-minute lecture, and they have kind of brought it to life with kind of a whiteboarding exercise where they asked an artist to kind of draw what he was hearing. And you know how they do that in the UPS commercials where they're drawing and then erases and then kind of animates the whole commercial. That's what they've done here, but they've taken this to the kind of an extreme. And the topic is really interesting because they're positing that the educational process, as Gail mentioned at the beginning of the show, has not moved fast enough from the industrial age to the 21st century. And he makes some strong statements, and I'm not sure that I agree with all of them, but I think there's some merit in at least watching the video, especially if you're an educator, because I think it does challenge educators to determine whether their teaching styles and their students, their 21st century students, should be taught in the same way that they were taught 30 years ago. And what we're doing as a result and the products that are being generated from our school system. So if you've got 12 minutes, this is, I think, 12 minutes well spent, if for nothing else, to enjoy the kind of innovative way they've shared the topic. So we'll put the link to that in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Did you get
great
a chance to look at it, Sally?
I did. I watched it. I was pretty engaged by it. Mm-hmm. And it's a great tie-in to our education theme this week.
Absolutely.
And actually, one of the things he talks about is ADHD and standardized test scores and things like that. And one of the headlines on the evening news last night was about ADHD and standardized test scores. And I was like, hey, that's what that guy was talking about. Mm-hmm. So anyway, definitely very applicable to today's world. So
yeah. He makes an interesting point, not to belabor this particular video, but there was a study done of attention deficit disorder results by state, how many instances or how many reported instances were there of these. I guess there's some reporting agency. And as you move east across the country, the levels go up dramatically. In fact, there's very few cases on the West Coast. As you get in the midsection of the country, they start to grow, and then on the East Coast, that's where the highest levels are, which was really interesting. I don't know what that says, but worth a listen, worth a watch.
Sure.
So, next week on the podcast, we have another interview, this time with Staff Minister Jonathan Favorite from Crosswalk Lutheran ministries in Arizona. And we talk a little bit about how they're using technology to spread the gospel. And we'll also be talking about some work that you and I did, Sally, in regard to websites and missions, and the workshop that I put together called Reaching Out in a Digital World, basically how to use your website as an evangelical tool. So that'll all be next week. Sounds like a full show already.
Yeah.
Gail, thank you for joining us once again.
You're very welcome.
And if somebody wanted to find out what you're thinking about and writing, how would they engage with you?
They could go to Twitter at just Gail Potratz. That's my Twitter.
Okay.
And on Facebook, I don't do too much on Facebook. I just do the church Facebook page.
So Twitter's the place for Gail Potratz.
Twitter, usually, yep.
And Sally, yourself?
I am Wells Tech Trainer on Twitter, so find me there. And I'm working on a new website of my own, but I'm not quite ready to reveal that yet.
Okay. And I'm M. Spriggs on Twitter and martinspriggs.com if you want to follow the blog. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Let's close the show with the music of Koine. Christ is Our Cornerstone from their album Koine 2. Talk to everybody next week.
Christ is our cornerstone, on Him alone we build. With His true saints alone, the courts of heaven are filled. On His great love, our hopes we place, of present grace and joys above. Oh, then with hymns of praise, these hallowed courts shall ring. Our voices we will raise, free and one to sing, and thus proclaim in joyful song, both loud and long, that glorious name. Hear, gracious God, do now and evermore draw near. Accept each faithful vow and all your children here, and more on those who pray each holy day your blessing pour. Here may we gain from heaven the grace which we implore, and may that grace once given be with us in